The afternoon session today is mainly focused on final project, but as we've gone into the mode now where we still have a few lectures simply for information and inspiration, today's lecture is going to be on ethics in machine learning. And well, let's jump right to it, just so that you have an idea. And as you can see, my first, note of limited warranty is the fact that I am no expert in ethics. And the following is just to provoke some discussion, I would say. And also because people sometimes ask about these elements in it. So that's the that's the plan. And we are going to end it with having a discussion as well. So, some of you might have made your own thoughts when I made the presentation about reinforcement learning and how you can train and train again and with rules and policy alone and get good at things. And the question is if that's going to enter war as well. So that's one element of it. But let's take something really down to earth where you think, all right, now, so machine learning holds certain opportunities, but there are also pitfalls. So here's a case where Target, which is a large US super chain, supermarket chain, we're mining for 25 products. Well, take a hypothetical example. And the question is really, and if you want to read the story, I propose you read below. A fictional shopper named Jenny Ward, who's 23 and lives in Atlanta. And in March, she bought cocoa butter lotion, a large purse, which is enough to double as a diaper bag. She bought zinc and magnesium supplies and a bright blue rug. And your machine learning algorithm tells you that there's an 80% chance that she's pregnant and she will deliver sometime late in August. Well, A, that's not a hypothetical case. And B, what happened was they started sending her commercials to her home with all sorts of products related to pregnancy. Her parents found these and got furious at Target first, because they thought, do you want to get our daughter pregnant? And then finding that she was already pregnant, it came back with an apology to Target, because they said, well, clearly it wasn't you doing it. But as a matter of fact, they should not have come back with an apology. Rather, they should have been criticizing them for mining whatever she bought and following up so radically on it. Yeah, I'd love to hear your opinions about that story. Speak up, no chat, unless your microphone is broken. Yeah, Simon.
Well, I'm just trying to formulate a good answer, but you seemed impatient. And so, I don't know if this is more unethical than data mining in general. Like, is this just another parameter that a company can look for? So if we allow companies to mine our data in order to sell us things, then why is this less okay than just data mining in general? Well, it's one stance.
I very much understand your question. One of the aspects that was criticized in this case was that if they had sent her an email to her private mail with, I don't know, anything, then they were not at fault, but they sent it to her home address, which happened to be her parents' home address, and that hence it was not personal information. And this has been known worldwide to lead, well, at least in the democratic rights world, that you can't do that. And a famous case of that is that there was a Japanese man who had been speeding at some point, and the police sent photos to his home address. And his wife opened it and found not only was he speeding, but there was sitting a woman next to him with time and date and place, and she should not have been there. And as a result, he got divorced. And the question was then, had they done what they should have done? The answer being no. So that was one of the problems in this case.
I mean, it seems like a massive invasion of privacy to send somewhat confidential data information to random people. Or not random people in this case.
Just not personal, right?
Yes.
Exactly. That's also why, you know, Target never thought of this. They just said, let's do what maximizes sales. But I think in retrospect, they would have loved not to have had this story.
But I mean, the way you put it, then the question is not a machine learning ethical problem. It's because if they did, it's just a delivery method problem. And so if they had sent her a personal mail instead, would it then have been fine?
Yeah, well, some disagree with that being fine as well, because there are certain things like sex preference, religion, ethnicity that shouldn't play a role, and maybe pregnancy or not falls under that category. But true, it's also a delivery problem. It's just a problem that you run into where, you know, here is a machinery that comes with suggestions. You could say maybe the machine doesn't know anything about pregnancy. It just relates different products and a timeline. And this was one of the cases it had in some, you know, imaginary space of degree of pregnancy and send things out. So anyway, let's leave it and go on. So the next question is your software racist? Because sometimes it can pick out cases a little too well, you could say. And as a result, for example, if it trained on something that contained a degree of racism, might be from chats or whatever, then you could end up that way. And I think, well, there are quite a few cases of this. For example, Google Translate, the translation between English and Turkish is based on whatever is already translated material. But it's from the 1950s, sort of classical books. And so the ungendered Turkish sentence would be translated according to what the person was. She is a nurse, he is a doctor. And that's because it learned from the stereotypes of the 1950s, the cultural patterns, and didn't know that perhaps didn't apply anymore. Now, I think that's a case where you don't do what's right, but that was perhaps hard to pick up, right? You don't just test the translation easily and see that that's a problem. Well, Microsoft had a chatbot that went completely berserk and simply learned to put racist posts based on the fact that 1% of the posts on whatever it had trained on were racist, right? And that is, So, I mean, they had to switch it off immediately once they saw what was going on. And Google had a photo recognition program that came where a black programmer sent a picture of him and his brother, and it labeled them as gorillas. That's also, you can see the problem. So it is very hot. I can see why Google would want to put out something, give us a photo and we'll label it. But it's a two-edged sword. All right, I see. Haida, please speak up.
I would just like to add that it's not just that the machine learning algorithm learns something racist, is that it also can have very important real-life implications, because there's been like talk of maybe predicting crime and increased crime rates in certain places, and thus tailoring your police activity in certain regions by using machine learning. So basically, you'll have this computer and something tell you, okay, you should probably maybe focus more on that area, and that can lead to some very unfortunate results that can be very questionable. Like, for example, the algorithm tells you, oh, you should patrol this black neighborhood right now and just keep doing that. And it's like, yeah, that's good. That's not going to go well.
No, we have the bias even without machine learning, right? Christiania has been heavily policed. And while some citizens are questionable, most are just regular citizens that get 10 times the rate of policing on top of them. It's not easy to deal with. I think one of the fun cases was this, who should go on bail, right? Where judges have to take a decision, should the person go on bail or not? Will the person re-offend or not? And in that case, it did better, but it could easily have both a religious, a racial, ethnic, whatever part to it. But here, the idea of an adversarial network comes in, because you might be forced to find the best solution that does not entail any information about religion or race, right? You put in the loss function, an additional term, lambda times, and then the adversarial network's ability to pick out the gender or the race or the sex or the religion of the person. So that's a place where, vanilla machine learning is probably not doing the right thing, but you can force it to be doing the right thing.
Well, yeah, but you still run into the same problem, because what if the underlying data is that statistically, like, just due to like either variance or either due to like cultural or social or sociological reasons, there is a discrepancy in race. Even if you don't include the racial statistics, your machine might still learn other statistics that predict race and work on that.
But if it uses that, then the adversarial will be able to use it as well and pick out on you.
But I mean, to Haider's point, and if you, for instance, if you want to do targeted policing and you ask the neural network, where should I police? And it says this black neighborhood. And it thinks that because from the data it has, there seems to be a lot of crime there, but it thinks there's a lot of, but data says there's a lot of crime because it's heavily policed, and so it becomes like a feedback loop between the data originally being biased, and so the machine learning learns the same bias. But you can't necessarily make a loss function that says do not use race as a category, but it doesn't use race as a category, it just uses this area here, and it learns exactly what the data is trying to tell it in some ways.
Yeah, so for example, let's say you feed it a lot of like something somewhat irrelevant data, like food being eaten or something like that, and for some cultural reason this particular group of people has this pattern of eating this type of food or doing this type of activity at that time, and it picks up not the actual race statistic, but something that correlates more with that race instead, or that particular group of people.
I think the first point was very valid, the second not. Let me try to explain. The first point was, if this was a heavily policed area before, and hence has a higher crime rate, for that reason alone, that's a case of giving it biased data in the police rate, and hence crime rate related to that. And that I see as a problem. You know, whenever you train on biased data, you will get something biased out. But let's say that that area, they eat differently, and they, and you don't feed it race, but you feed all the indicators from which it can guess what race it is. Well, the adversarial network behind will say, I can see that in the loss function, you find this policing pattern to be the best solution, which is, I don't know, heavily over-policing in that area. But from the race data that I have, I can guess that there's a racial difference here, and I will penalize you for that solution, even if you find it the best. I will add a lambda, which is high, and a loss function depending on how well can I pick out race on the same on the solution you're coming with. And I can, and hence it is not the optimal solution.
Ah, I just didn't understand how those adversarial networks work. So what you're saying is that you have this mechanism in the adversarial network that it penalizes patterns based on.
Yeah. Race. So if it can pick out races in this, you know, correlate to any degree, well, we penalize your loss function. So it's not the best solution. So I haven't seen it in full use anywhere, but it's certainly one of the possible solutions that has been pointed out as well. And for example, the Bayle case, you know, if it from Bayle can tell any information about race or religion or sex, then, well, there you go. And that might mean that you actually get more people that go out and reoffend than you could optimally get, but you would, with regard to race, have a more just system. So that's an option. Yeah, Rasmus?
What if one of these variables was like super important for your outcome? Then isn't this more like not so much a machine learning problem, but more like a societal problem, or like a problem in the underlying patterns in your data?
True. I think the Bayle case is good, right? Because but let's say that it's very clear that, let's say for all races, reoffending a crime is very low, except one little minority, one group, you know. For example, let's say that some high-class drug is extremely addictive. That's not unlikely. And there's a small group of white guys who will reoffend no matter what. Right? Then none of them should go on bail because it will recognize that that's a particular group. And then you might have to say, all right, we can't put them all into jail directly. We will have to put some fraction of them out on the streets again, and they will reoffend. And we don't get the optimal solution, but we get one that looks not too gender, race, and so on. And I think in the end, that's a political decision to what degree, well, you could say the size of the penalty function, for example.
But I think it kind of goes to a deeper question regarding justice in general, whether or not you want a system that catches more criminals, but also catches more innocent people, because of course you can have like the stricter your justice system, the more criminals you will catch, but you will also put more innocent people in jail, and so you can optimize that however you want. If you arrest anyone accused of a crime and then put them in jail, then you will hit 100% of criminals, but you will also hit a lot of innocent people. And in the same way, you can decide that even though we could get a more, maybe win some percents by using race as a characteristic, you may decide that it has too many negative consequences to use that. And so, but that becomes, again, a larger ethical question about how you want to do justice.
Yeah, but maybe you can keep it to the simple part where you say the rate of innocent people going to jail must not rise. Right, so you keep that at the same level, but you manage to catch more criminals. Or you might say, we just need to catch the same rate of criminals and the rate of innocents going to jail is going to drop. How you manage it, right? Better ability to classify, well, in this case, help that. I know it's very black and white type, but it's not that simple. But let's go to a few other cases before we take more discussion. Just a few other cases. For example, in housing prices, would it be okay for banks and Ministry of Tax to evaluate your residence based on variables that, for example, includes the description from the last time it was on sale, or the number of clicks that potential buyers used, or the number of times it appears in on Facebook and other social media? Is that okay? And Adriana, right? Maybe a less controversial example. I was looking for controversial, but let's just take a less controversial example. Is the decision on credit checks, which is often based on simple CART. I don't know what the
classification and regression trees. So if I may interrupt a little bit, yeah. It was a very interesting discussion on justice and societal effects. If I may just interject for a few seconds. And this is also about the kind of, in that case, it's a very human example in the sense that it may change someone else's life in a very abrupt way. But it's also the kind of output that you choose. You know, in the case of bail, we've been talking about a yes or no, but it might also be the kind of conditions that you need to give the person on bail so that it will not iterate the crime. And so, you know, it might be on bail in a particular community, on bail in a particular neighborhood, or on bail with some, basic income for 3 months or whatever. This is a multi-class problem instead of a 0-1 problem. And that may be one of the ways of kind of circumventing that and addressing some societal.
That's a good point.
But this is, I don't want to go into that because, you know, we're really going to the ethics a lot. It may be a simpler example to understand is what happens sometimes in banks when you want to order a credit card. And there are various conditions that you have to, that you simply give to the system, and the system runs a very simple classification tree, which is based on whether you own a car or not, and your income, but also other things that are just your gender, more than the gender, your actual sexual identification at birth, your age, and sometimes even the ethnicity. And there are, as other people were saying, there are various quantities that seem to correlate with other things that are societally ingrained and make some category more risky in terms of credit history. And sometimes even if you simply, you know, you've just moved to the country and you don't own a car because you don't want to own a car, which is, you know, which would be a perfectly normal thing to do in Denmark, but not in the US, for example, you don't get a good credit score, even though you're very, you know, you have a stable income and you're very reliable in your payments, etc. And it just gets longer for you. And this is just a stupid example, you know, of a white guy from Europe going to the US, but you can imagine that it can get way more critical for people of color, because there are some variables that, I was reading it somewhere, I should fetch it, but there are some variables that tend to correlate with that. And this is a classical example of a stereotype that makes it hard for you to exit a societal condition where you have already being relegated because of a stereotype that was fed into the system.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Adriano. I can say two other things where which I think are not quite well. One is controversial, the other one is probably not, but case for discussion. Banks actually see that their customers are often in financial distress just before a divorce, right? If you got called into the bank and he wanted to discuss your coming divorce without, you know, it's obviously a no-go, but to what extent can they react on this? And for schools, it's been suggested that maybe machine learning can be used to pick up the students who are not thriving in school and who are likely to drop out, and simply to help them, to pick them up for a chat or something, but to help them. And I think the motivation here is very important. Is it to help others or is it to penalize others? But these are cases. And now in the following, I would like you, well, first of all, any comments or questions here? Yeah, Rasmus?
I've just like been thinking, couldn't you say that there are like three categories of problems in this ethics and machine learning? There's like privacy, then there is a problem of like biased data, and then there is like actual machine learning problems where you can say like privacy is what's wrong in the target example, biased data was probably what ruined Microsoft's chat bug, but because people were like actively trying to ruin it. And then like you can say the gorilla example is more like inherently a problem in machine learning, because like it will be harder from like visual inspection to like tell the problem or the difference between a black man and a gorilla than a white man and a gorilla, basically. So some of it is not really like inherent machine learning problems, but more like data and privacy problems.
Clear. Haider, any comments?
Yeah, so I think there's one example that doesn't really fit into those categories, and that's the example of the self-driving car. It's a very classical one, because so you have this self-driving car, and let's say you get into an accident or something starts working, like you start swerving, right? But you can but the car still has some control, and there's two people on the road in front of you. There's one an old grandma and one some young guy, and it can swerve either to hit the grandma or to hit the young guy. How does it make that decision, right? Or what if it has to choose between a path that will give you the driver a higher chance to survive, but some innocent person will get run over by the out of control car? And that's not a problem that really has a hard solution, because it's like, okay, so you've programmed your car so it'll always save the driver and just kill anybody and not care about them at all. A lot of people are going to have problems with that. But in the other case where it's like, no, it's never going to save the driver, who wants to buy that car, right?
Yeah. I think that case, which is admittedly very known, some of the replies has been that it should minimize the overall amount of life, but both, you know, the driver and those outside. And it should also, and then the discussion came, is it life expectancy? Should it actually make an age estimate in the process? That might be also a hard thing. Should you punch in your age when you go into a car? And all of this plays very, very poorly with legal matters, right? How do you go to court with that? You write out what the network had of values before the accident happened, where that came from, or the reason for the choice. It's not easy, and unlike science, there are less solutions, I would call it, more discussion. I want you to discuss, though, and I'm thinking that we should take the last 15 minutes to discuss ethics in machine learning. And perhaps we discussed ethics more than machine learning now, but just please try to keep it to the machine learning cases. And I've put up here a few points or questions that might provoke or inspire thought, hopefully inspire. And you may choose from them at will. And then I want you to simply go for 14 minutes, probably in a moment, into breakout rooms. And then we'll discuss it for that amount of time. And then we'll summarize starting at 2 o'clock real quick with you know, any interesting part of your discussion. So, well, that was a lot of participants per breakout room. We will make it like this. All right. Cool. See you in 14 minutes.
X-Holes, kan du sætte mig ind i et andet rum?
Ja, Heider, jeg sidder faktisk og kigger på fordelingen.
Der var to mennesker inde i mit rum, og de var begge to i FK.
Ved du hvad? Jeg tager lige nu 20.4. Og du bliver også sendt til 4. Er det lykkedes?
Der er ikke noget kommet op endnu.
Nå, det er sjovt her. Jeg kan se, at det er sendt til...
Nå, der. Nej, det er bare fordi, der kom ikke en pop-up. Den var nede i den der mall.
Okay. Cool. Hi, Adriano and Carl.
Hello.
Hello. I don't know if Carl is around. No, he has the microphone problem.
Yeah, it works. Great.
Just quickly to talk to Carl and update you, Adriano.
Yeah.
We've worked out such that each student will get a PDF report on how they did during the project. And what I outlined in the mail below was how we're actually going to write it.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's auto-generated. The only thing we can't do is inspect their algorithms and methods and cross-checks and so on. And for this, we should give them points based on the short file that they submitted. I just wanted to check with you that you think it's cool. I think it's really cool. I think they're going to get the most feedback that they ever gotten from a non-physical class.
Yeah.
So, and we have essentially everything in place. So, yeah, we just evaluate these 20 or so persons real quick, 0, 1, 2, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just need to send you the 0, 1, 2 for each person, and that's it.
Yeah, in the list given to you. And Carl, do we agree? We just write the number after the name because then it can be machine read.
Yeah, sure. That would be fine.
All right. Cool. Let's try that before the end of the week, because I also wanted to prepare a good presentation of the problems and stuff. Yeah. And finally, Carl, unknowing of the state, could you send me the code and the files?
Which?
Should we put it somewhere on ADA?
So for the grading?
Exactly.
Sure.
Is ADA a good place? And did you write it in notebook or just
roll? I started in a normal script, but then I moved to notebook.
Okay, then it runs on ADA, so yeah.
Yes.
Not that the other didn't, but yeah.
It was easier to use a notebook instead of reading in all of the long, long list of submissions every time.
Okay. Simone joined us, so let's cut it here. Well, one last question. Simone? I'm just going to move you to breakout room 2.
Sorry. So the one I was discussing with suddenly disappeared, and then I was like alone in the room.
that's why I have tried to move you to breakout room 2.
Okay, great. That would be nice.
Can you see it? I think you need to go to the more button.
Join breakout. Yeah, thank you.
Of course. Did that work, Simona?
Yeah. work the other way around.
Possibly. Yeah. Instead of you joining Catcher, Catcher joined you, Simone. All right. We'll just keep it there. I'll write you one last question by mail.
Okay.
Now we're alone again.
Now we are alone again in the universe. Okay, it's simply on the sharing of the code. I think it would be really cool if we shared it.
Yeah.
There's no secrets in it, and everybody can rerun it on their own.
See how they're fed. Yeah.
Yeah, but they won't get the same scoring because they don't have the variable frequency list as well.
No, that's right.
or the scores of each other, which we use to compute the performance score.
That's right. So, then we would have to write that into a file.
Yes.
Is that the only problem? Also, do we, maybe I'm reluctant to give out the test solution set because we plan to maybe use it next year. They would also need that.
True.
You know what? Maybe the point is that we give out the code, but also make clear that they can't just run it, but just for them to see it.
I don't know. I mean, things tend to pass on from students to students, so...
Yeah, but the solution calculation scoring code is fine for them to pass, right? It's no secret how we evaluate.
Yeah, the thing is the file that they use for the
exactly. So I wouldn't give the file. They can't recompute it themselves.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I agree on that. Let's keep that local. Cool. Well, that's it. Carl, du vil lægge det på ærter et sted, gå ud fra?
Ja, jeg skal lige have de sidste kommentarer ind, for det er sidst, vi snakkede, og så kan jeg godt
okay.
For eksempel.
No stress. Vi, vi retter ting imens.
Yes.
Og vi... Nu kommer folk tilbage. All right, everybody, welcome back. Please tell me what you discussed and what you thought were the most interesting points or solutions or problems.
So I think one point that some of us reached was that the first question about medicine, I at least, and some other people couldn't think of any issue with it that wasn't direct, wasn't money relevant. Like if you remove like the money portion, the insurance company, the should we pay for this guy's treatment, then I don't think I can see any issues that ML might result in. Basically, it's capitalism and not medicine.
Okay. One issue that comes up is that you take a picture, I don't know, an MR scan of people because they have back pain, and the algorithm doesn't find anything in your back, but it finds something other nasty. DNA.
What's the is that a bad thing if it finds a disease you didn't know about? I'd say that was good, no?
Yeah, but some people don't want to know it.
Oh, I mean, that's just...
Well, that's stupid. That problem. That's not an ethical problem. Mike, while my doctor was removing this... while my doctor was shaving me, he accidentally removed my tumor. But I wanted that tumor, like...
No, but they're actually, and they're quite serious about it. When they do DNA, they ask you, do you want to know? For example, if you have DNA taken from your children, that has an origin. And so the question is, should we look through it generally? And do you want to know? And they want your signature on the goddamn paper before they do anything.
Now I think I get what you mean. Like people with inheritable diseases that can't be cured and they don't want to know because what's the point? It's just stress. Okay.
Yeah. I get it.
Another ethical problem with regarding to medicine that we discussed, as we found one that is like if there's a decision to be made, if you have limited amount of medicine or limited capacity to treat patients, then it would make sense to have machine learning in either the side or have an input. But, Jesus Christ. On who it should treat it. And that is clearly an ethical issue, partly because you have a machine learning deciding life and death issue, and partly because as you relinquish a lot of responsibility if you just allow the machine learning to make the decision. Sorry about that.
Yeah, but I mean, I think at least maybe I have a really narrow idea of what medicine is, but that still feels like a problem with resources and like bureaucracy, and instead of just straight up a medicine problem.
Yeah, so we're already kind of doing those kinds of things where we're some specialist, some doctor or some council of doctors tries to get an estimate for how successful operation or procedure will be, and then they'll weigh, okay, it costs this much money, should we actually do this? If the machine learning algorithm, if you include a machine learning algorithm that gives you a more precise result, it's not the ethical issue doesn't lie with the machine learning algorithm. It's still a resource allocation problem.
Well,
you can ask a doctor for his arguments, like, but it's not so easy to ask the machine learning algorithm, like, why does this person have to die and not this person?
Well, you could hand them the Shep values and say you lost the game.
Yeah.
You didn't.
And you need the general population to understand this.
Yeah. So
there's something about transparency and people not. Maybe feeling comfortable with this.
And I would understand why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think machine learning will transform the way wars are fought?
It already has, hasn't it? with the machine learning and drones, and we literally, that's the thing with machine learning, we literally don't know what the ends of it are. It most definitely will.
Can you think of specific ways?
We discuss killbots, machines like robots that go in and fight your wars for you, and what happens if they kill civilians. It's like if you have a human accidentally killing a civilian, you can have a whole trial about it, and there can be repercussions for that human or for the command structure, and there could be like political hay made by the opposition party, and there's a whole process that gets started. But what exactly do you do when your killbot burns down an orphanage?
Well, there's responsibility. Just like soldiers are not responsible, but their commanders are. Those who build killbots, are they not the responsible, not the killbots themselves?
Well, the soldiers are responsible also to some degree. They can be prosecuted for war crimes on an individual basis and not just on a command basis.
Can you think of a single case of that?
Alpine.
Nuremberg?
Yeah, Nuremberg did not go down to the soldier level. Very far from.
They just said at the top of the hierarchy, that's true.
But we had a somewhat similar thing about the ethics of war, or like machine learning and war. And the funny thing is that it can make it both better and worse, because it can just optimize whatever you want to do. So in one sense, it can make war, quote unquote, better, because you can presumably make the machine learning be more accurate than an actual person would be able to do. So if you want to take out a specific commander, then you can take out him and not the whole city around him or the whole house around him or whatever much. So you can then teach it to minimize civilian casualties, which would be good. On the other hand, and if you are less ethical or just feel like that is more optimal for your war effort, you could also probably make a machine learning an algorithm that optimizes casualties in a way that no human could do, so you can and make it a lot more. You can make the machine learning, make the algorithm that optimizes casualties or terror or whatever else you wanted to do. So in its ability to probably make everything in war more efficient, so whatever you want to do, you can do better. So it can make both war worse and better.
Yeah.
You could also decide that you are the one to be killed.
Then I have made a bad algorithm. If it can kill me, I, of course, have it localized to some area that is not my country or something. I think that feels like an easier problem to solve.
I'm suddenly thinking of a novel which would fit modern days. Somebody who's trying to build a killbot, but in fact, just as a target of his algorithm, because the person has a sense of moral, he just uses himself in the training case, just because what would it do? And here we're talking about an algorithm, not a machine. Imagine he then accidentally lets it loose and it starts from a purely virtual point of view to try to kill him. All right, before we let imagination run wild, I think we should have a break. But before we do that, I would very much like to hear somebody having thought about number four. Please, some of the positive things.
Self-driving cars is the most obvious. And there's these super like robot doctors that can basically do surgery perfectly in some cases. And then you can also say maybe this isn't ethical, but like robot lawyers who are not biased against anything but are really fucking good at the law and knows everything about it. But yeah, those would be any extreme scenarios.
There's also the
first two are not far-fetched at all.
There's also a case that can be positive, which is inspired by what you asked before. Or like if there is, if like the bank's machine learning algorithm Adam can see that you might be about to be divorced, it might actually reach out to, or like send a real person to reach out and help you and see like we have a feeling that you're having a bad time. Would you like some help or some hour with a therapist or something? So there's like benevolent big brother scenario where like, because there's so much data about you, there's a lot, there's always someone who knows that you are having a bad time, and so you can always get help even if you don't know it. Right? But of course that has some privacy implications, but also it could help a lot of people. So, you know, good thing, bad thing.
I think there could also be some, like, I think a lot of people would have an easier time talking about like psychological problems to a robot. So you could have like a robot psychologist that is like that'd be like really fucking advanced, right? But a robot psychologist that you can easily talk to because it's not a human, so it's a lot easier to talk to. And then it gives answer that it knows a real psychologist also would.
Actually, some of these have chatbots already exist, in fact. And there was a bit of debate recently about whether it was the right thing to do for employers to basically send you off to a chatbot to talk about your problems. And the problem in that case is whether you have something broken that needs to be fixed, or whether your problems come from a structure in which and the culture in which you are inserted. And so whether, you know, your place of employment needs to change, and the stressors that you're experiencing are not something you should be solving with the robot therapist, but something that the actual employer should solve on the side of the structure. But it's true. Something like that actually exists. A friend of mine tried it just for fun, and it was... The problem is that it already assumes that you have a problem. So it asks you, so, hi, what are you doing today? Well, I'm cleaning the house. Oh, so why are you cleaning the house? Well, you know, I just need to tidy it up. And maybe you want to talk about it. So sometimes it just really goes astray in a strange way.
Yeah.
This is already being... this is already being done to some extent, but I'm thinking that if machine learning algorithms become less computationally expensive, then it has big potential in cross-disciplinary climate problems, because there are so many complex climate problems and relations that we still don't know because of limits of computation. And I think in the future, it would be nice to see if those cross-disciplinary problems, like combination of physics and biology and geography and everything, that might help us combat and the climate change, but also just in general understand climate and sort of be able to redistribute resources and stuff like that. So that's what I'm hoping for, at least.
Okay, cool. Before Heider, Rasmus also wrote that fingerprint analysis, maybe one should, from time to time, think very specific small-scale cases that just helps a lot to do that. Anyway, Heider?
Yeah, you said specific small-scale cases, but why don't we just go as big as possible? In the future, we'll have the machine learning will literally do all of our work for us, and communism will finally work.
Yes.
Yeah, this is called the Xeno-Communism of Abundance, and I'm all up for it. I'm not sure we're supposed to express these opinions, but yeah, it's one of the things being considered.
There is the logical conclusion if you just have like a benevolent computer to like run the government, run the government function, and then you can live your life, because like you could have a computer that in principle would not be corrupt and would not be rises at the chat, but I think that like a benevolent robot overlord could be a reasonable way of having a society. But of course, there's a lot of practical problems with that, like a whole host. But I mean, there is a version of reality where that could be good.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if machine learning takes over our jobs at some point too. Like, we get machine learning algorithms that talk about machine learning algorithms to improve other machine learning algorithms. And then, or physics in general. Or other jobs, like some that seems completely out of left fields for a robot to take over.
Yeah, I mean, that would.
I don't think we're first in line. I think we're last in line for that.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm saying it could happen at some point, and I wouldn't be that surprised.
I have an example that's not that unrealistic, and it ties back to that whole robot psychologist thing, because there are some, maybe there are some problems that you can talk with a robot that you don't feel comfortable talking with a normal human being, and maybe there are things you're comfortable doing with a robot and not a normal human being. I'm not gonna say it out loud, but it starts with SEX and it's called, and it ends with bot.
Yeah. No, but the sex education could be another obvious but, place where, yeah.
Regarding in getting replaced by robots, I felt like a couple of years ago there was like a top song that was, or like there was a song written by a machine learning algorithm that was very, that was, I don't know if it topped the chart or was just like, here it is. Yes, and it's like articles written by machine learning. So like the computers are like slowly eating away at a lot of the things that we would not think computers could do, like writing articles or writing music or stuff like that. But I think Troels might be right that we might be the last to, some of the last people to be replaced. But then again, and what is it that we do that like a computer could not do? I mean, you know, I think they can probably learn to write better algorithms than we can.
Creativity. Artists will be the others.
I don't know, man. I've seen some computer art and computer music, and it's actually pretty good. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point we had AI music and AI paintings that people could enjoy.
But Troels, do you need creativity if you just have a large amount of permutations? So you may be able to come up with a creative solution, but an algorithm can find 1 million solutions and then pick out the right one. So it might not be that creative, but it can find a million random solutions and then.
Sure, but it can't ask the good question to begin with.
Well, maybe we just need to have one that can.
Sorry?
I mean, the issue I have seems to be like everything we've said in like the last 30 years that computers will not be able to do this. They've always been able to do it. It seems like there's really nothing that.
The answer is in my lifetime, probably also yours.
Ah, yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
But that doesn't really help us.
But there's like a very big difference now in that what we've been saying that they probably can't do has been based on like technical things, and what the Troels is saying here is like maybe some sort of a philosophical difference between us and computers. I agree that if we hit the singularity and we literally have sentient robots, they can probably replace us pretty well. But the question is it even possible to make a sentient robot, full on sentience?
All right. I think we've been going at it for an hour now, and I
have a comment actually. I only believe the consciousness is caused by quantum mechanical effects. So unless we have machines built on quantum computers, I don't ever think they will be conscious.
They don't need to be on a quantum computer. You can just have a randomization device, a quantum device for randomization.
And I mean, at some point, we have to ask a question. What's the difference between actual consciousness and something that just looks close enough to be consciousness?
True.
There isn't really a difference.
Turing tests.
Yeah, but then again,
we will be the adversarial.
But then again, and philosophers spend a lot of time talking about what consciousness is, and there is like all things have brains that work in principle on a quantum level. If you reduce at some point a brain, some point you get some chemistry, and at some point you get some quantum chemistry. But I mean, so just because something has a real brain that has something that is deep down related to quantum mechanics, that doesn't make it conscious. So there's no relation between quantum mechanics and consciousness, as far as I can tell. Well, that just, I mean.
I know, but I think you should read a little bit about Roger Penrose's theory about this, Simon. He actually thinks that consciousness is something which lies deeper, in a deeper layer than our physical universe, and like a quantum space of something. And
okay, but like, so there is one thing we can say about consciousness is there's no clear consensus on what it even is and what constitutes a conscious being. And also, to the point where you said Turing test tools, I don't like the Turing test because I know several people who would fail it.
Mm. Yeah. Well, you have to have the true positive rate, and you have to have a better rock curve. Some will fail. it's on a statistical basis. Anyhow, thanks for the discussion. I think we will end it here. That doesn't mean you are not allowed to continue it at the rate you want. But I think we certainly need a break, and we are not going to reconvene here until, what shall we say, 2:45. If possible, then Rasmus, Heider, and Sven, just to discuss a few projects. Can I catch you at 3? Anyway, we can discuss that in a mail or somewhere else. Let's take a break, reconvene 2:45.